This podcast is a service of Bridgeway Community Church in Rockford, Michigan. Thanks for listening. Here's today's message.
Well, good morning, Bridgeway. It's great to see you here today. I want to add my words of welcome. If you're new or visiting with us, I'm Pastor Ron, and we have been in a series having kind of this ongoing conversation as a community about the mess that we find ourselves in. Frankly, honestly, if I'm just real with you for a moment, I look out at the world, and again, another week where there's difficulty and challenge and inequality, and I feel in my spirit this need to address it. How do we address the mess? And specifically, how do we love people, love others, when that isn't always the easiest thing to do? So we've been looking kind of afar at the world, and then we've kind of been moving ourselves inward at people that maybe are difficult and messy. I mean, come on, are there any other kind of people than messy people? As well as then even looking, hopefully, internally at our own lives. Having a conversation with the person in the mirror about how do I address the mess, the ways in which I contribute to the messy world around us. And so today what I want to talk about is I want to talk about a topic that I'm really excited about. And that topic is the topic of leadership. I want to talk about today, how do you lead in a really messy world right now? What does messy leadership look like in our world right now? In fact, you kind of ask the question of how do I lead in this mess? I mean, you might not even know where you're going in this mess. How do I lead? How do I organize? How do I motivate and inspire people? How do I motivate and inspire myself when everything seems to be getting challenging? You kind of feel like things are in these liminal times. Everything seems to be kind of pulled back. How do you lead in the valley of the virus, maybe, is kind of your situation? And I want to talk about that today. From a biblical standpoint, what does that look like? Leadership. Now, I know immediately, a few minutes into the talk, some of you hear the topic leadership, and some of you are so excited. You're like, finally, I love this, and I love getting a chance to hear about the biblical way of leading. And I know that also there are some of you in the room that you hear the topic leadership, and you just immediately think, oh man, I get to tune this one out. You know, I get to just kind of, you know, peace out for this message because come on, Pastor, I am not a leader. I was not given any leadership gifts. I don't have any leadership opportunities. So this message must not be for me. And I want to caution you before you tune out way too early in this message that I have a very refreshing take on leadership. I believe honestly that every single person has the potential and the calling on their life to lead wherever God has placed you. You probably heard of this question. It comes up all the time in leadership discussions. You know, is a leader born or is a leader made? Have you ever heard that discussion? You know, is it something you're born with or is it something that you're made and developed? And I'll be honest with you as your pastor, I hate that question. I hate that question, is a leader born or is a leader made? Because I think actually the question is a setup for failure. I mean, it's a complete setup because if you think about it, if you believe that a leader is just simply someone born with the gifts and that person doesn't rise to the level of the expectations of others, then they've just kind of set themselves up for failure. And in the same way, in the opposite way, if a leader is made, then all the onus is on you. You have to develop and become this great leader. And I've heard all the conversations, I've heard all the arguments. I know there's DNA mapping of this RS4950 gene that is supposedly like, that's the leadership gene. If you have that, then you are called to be a leader. And the truth is, there's only like 20% of people that have this gene in them. And so I've kind of had this issue with this idea of born or made. What is it? Oh, I can't stand that question. So I get a call from Cornerstone University, and they said a few years ago, hey, we're trying to do this study on leadership. We're talking to business professionals, nonprofit organizations, and leaders in the church, and we have this one question we want to ask you. Can you get to guess what the question was? Are leaders born or are leaders made? And I tried to be so respectful. I went to seminary at Cornerstone, and I said, look, I have a different take on leadership. You might want to call somebody else. You know, I don't believe maybe that it's one or the other. And I believe that actually leadership is this calling that is potential in your life. And the person's like, well, no, I need to check the box. Like, I need to know, born or made, which one is it? And I said, well, think of it this way with me. What if leadership is actually this idea of a spring? You know how a spring gets wound and a spring just laying there means nothing. But when you compress that spring, under either tension or crisis or, oh, I don't know, a pandemic or even opportunity. It's then when you compress that spring that you really find out if someone has the gift of leadership to spring into action. And the person was sort of like, well, I don't get it. Does that mean that you believe they're born or made? And I said, look, I think there's more. I think there's an opportunity for every one of us to lead. And wouldn't the world need that and benefit from that right now? If every single person, wherever God has placed you, just decided to say, you know what, I'm going to lead to the best of my ability in the place that God's called me. Maybe you find yourself here this morning and you do lead. You lead in kind of the classic sense. You're in a business environment, you're in a corporate office, and you're leading, you're rallying people in teams, and that's your place where God has called you. Maybe you're here this morning and you're a teacher. And you're trying to figure out, how do I lead in a classroom during a pandemic? School's never been done this way before. You're like a part-time, you know, technical expert, a teacher on top of it. And you're thinking, how do I lead in this environment? Maybe this morning, as I look out, I see a lot of students in the room. And you didn't know this until you walked in, but you are a leader in that classroom because people are going to look at you in that classroom and they're going to expect certain things from you, even online. And you have the opportunity with maybe a few words or a few ways in which you carry yourself to lead. Maybe you're here this morning and you lead in such a vital way. You lead in the home. And we want to come alongside of you as your church. We believe, we take full accountability for the idea that if you raise a child in the way they go, then when they're old, they won't depart from it. That Proverbs 22. And you have the opportunity as a parent or as a grandparent to lead those lives around you in the path of discipleship. I believe everyone has this opportunity. I want to talk today, how do you lead in times that are lean and sort of tough and liminal? How do you lead in this environment and give God all the glory? I want to look at a story in Judges chapter 7. If you have your Bible, I'd love you to turn there, or maybe your electronic Bible on an app, or obviously the words will be on the screens as well. Judges is one of my favorite books in the Bible. In fact, I just want to give kind of like a word to you. If you're here and you've never read the book of Judges, I'm going to guess it's because you heard the word judge and you immediately got in your mind kind of this picture of what a judge is. Oh, you know, like a Supreme Court judge or something in the legal system, or maybe like Judge Judy. Like, you think about that and you're like, I'm not going to read the book of Judges. That's going to be so boring. And you've missed what Judges is really about. When you hear the word judge from a biblical standpoint, you need to think warrior. Think Braveheart. Think any movie with Mel Gibson in it. That's what the book of Judges is all about. And God uses these individuals that God's people wanted. They wanted judges. They wanted warriors to be over them, to lead them into battle. And it's kind of a series of sort of degrading from strength to weakness, from God's strength to really human weakness. And there's 11 judges in the book of Judges, and each one of them, these mighty warriors, pale in comparison to God. But they are charged with leading God's people against the enemies. God is using the enemies around them to really get the attention of God's people and bring them back to God. You'll read through the Bible and you'll see a list of these enemies. They've got strange names, names like the Moabites and the Amalekites and the Midianites. Kind of always ends in ites. Just think termites. Like, they're all the enemies of God's people. And this story in particular is going to take the task, God's people versus the Midianites. One scholar would estimate that the Midianites was the largest of all of the enemies. They had approximately 200,000 warriors. Now, you'll see in the text, God's army, the Israelites, they're about 32,000 at full strength. And you'll see what happens to them. But God uses this man, Gideon, who is the fourth judge in this storyline, to go to battle with God's people. And I got to tell you right off the bat that Gideon is sort of the least assuming leader you'll ever meet in the Bible. In fact, he displays zero leadership potential right off the bat. When God calls Gideon, Gideon begins his line of excuses. He says, oh, God says, Gideon, you're a mighty warrior. And Gideon says, no, you know, God, I come from the weakest clan in Israel. And God kind of shakes his head and says, no, 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 Gideon, you are a mighty warrior. And Gideon says, no, not only am I from the weakest clan, but I'm the weakest person in my clan. He's just got no confidence. He has no desire to lead, even though God is calling him and giving him this promise. In fact, Gideon decides to test God. You might have heard of the Gideon's fleece test. I'm going to put out Gideon's fleece. And what this was is this is really just kind of the first of excuses for Gideon. He says, well, God, you know, here's what I'll do. I'll put my fleece out at night, and if the dew of the night, if in the morning, if the fleece is wet and the ground is dry, then I know that you're with me, and this isn't just some big scam job. And sure enough, God must be rolling his eyes and say, whatever it takes, Gideon. First night, boom, miracle. Fleece is wet, ground is dry. And Gideon looks at that miracle and says, no. What I really meant, God, is I'll lay my fleece out, and if the fleece is dry and the ground is wet, then I'll know you're with me. And God, again, just whatever parlor trick it takes, God does it again that night. And now Gideon is without excuse. God has shown himself to him. He's shown himself to be faithful. And he's going to take him on this path of leadership and growing into all that God has desired. He's about to go to war with the Midianites, who have far outnumbered him. And I want you to see how God is going to continue to hone the leadership of Gideon, starting in Judges 7, beginning in verse 2. The Lord said to Gideon, "You have too many men. I cannot deliver Midian into their hands, or Israel would boast against me. My own strength has saved me. Now announce to the army, anyone who trembles with fear may turn back and leave Mount Gilead." So 22,000 men left, while 10,000 remained. I mean, this is so interesting to me. He's already outnumbered with his small army, and God gives this very simple opportunity. Hey, any of you in the army of God, if you're just even a little bit scared, look, no questions asked. I won't even look down on you. You can just tap out now, and you can go back home. No worries whatsoever. And there was fear in that camp. 22,000 men returned home. Now, they had reason to fear, not only because were the Midianites a large army, they were a skilled warrior group. In fact, history tells us that the Midianites were the first to learn how to fight from camel. And so they had swords, they had camels. I don't know anything about camels, but I do know this. If you ride an animal that bites and spits, that has to be an advantage. And so they're going into war against these Midianites, and 22,000, fearful for their life, say, you know what, I'm out, I'm not going to go to battle. I look at this story and I just think this is just Gideon just being set up for this opportunity to really trust God. I mean, I wonder if Gideon was one of the ones that wanted to go with the 22,000 and say, you know what, I don't want any part of this. But really what's insightful in these opening lines of the story is if you want to know what God thinks about us, you have to look at what God really says about us. See, God does this not to just make it harder, but really to make Gideon more reliant on God. He says, if I don't thin your ranks, you're going to boast. And you're going to say, my own strength has saved me. God says, I want to make sure you know without a doubt that it is the Lord alone who saves you. In fact, I think this is the beginning of leadership. And leadership really begins with this coming into these opportunities with humility. Leadership begins with humility. You think about it, I mean, humility is sort of it's a slope, right? I mean, you can start out with humility, but if you're not careful, you're going to get humbled. And if you're not humbled and you don't stop there, you could run the risk of being completely humiliated. And this is what Gideon needs to learn. I look at the world today, I look at people who are in leadership, people with power, people with influence, and I sometimes wonder, do they even realize who they are without God? I think far too often we boast in our own strengths, in our own ability. And the pathway, friends, is if you can begin to walk into humility. I'll just give you kind of a simple prayer, a prayer that I say oftentimes and just kind of what just reminds me of just being humble. And you can just make this your prayer. Just say, you know, simply, God, I am not strong enough. I am not wise enough. I don't have enough resources, but I know that you do. And I believe that God will honor that prayer, that beginning step of humility. I was thinking about just some ways in which I've seen God take humility and grow a person's faith because of it. I was thinking of a woman I just spoke with just in the last few weeks, and I listened to her tell her story, and she was having resource after resource being taken away from her. She lost her job, which isn't uncommon during this COVID era and restructuring and those sort of things, but then she got sick on top of it. So now she's out of work and she can't get a job. And the bills were piling up, and the kids still needed to eat, and then the final straw, she got evicted. And that's when our stories began to intersect, and I was so proud of just hearing her story and then hearing her say, you know, I know that God is still going to get me through this. And as a church, we were able to come alongside of the situation and just more than anything, just to see the faithfulness of God working in this person's life. Just humility through and through. I was thinking about another story, and it has to do with this building that you're in right now. You're in this building. It's a beautiful church building. I love this place. But you need to know that when we were looking for a church home, a building to kind of renovate and create for God's experience here, we looked at a lot of buildings. And I'll tell you what humility is. I'll tell you that humility is when you go with a group of leaders. In fact, every single leader on the team at this church at that time, myself included, we looked at this building and we'd pass on it. We'd say, no, that building, that's never going to be a church. It's too much work, too much environmental sin, too much destruction. No, and we'd go look at another building. And then somehow God would humbly call us back to this space. In fact, your pastor here is on record of saying, I don't know, even if they gave us that building, if we could turn it into a church. And so you got to be ready to eat some humble pie. And I think that's what Gideon is doing. He is being humble before God. He's getting a big dose of humility. But God is not done with him yet. In fact, picking up the story, watch what God does next. Verse 4, it says, "But the Lord said to Gideon, 'There are still too many men. Take them down to the water, and I will thin them out for you there. If I say this one shall go, he shall go with you. But if I say this one shall not go with you, he shall not go.' So Gideon took the men down to the water. There the Lord told him, 'Separate those who lap the water with their tongues, as a dog laps, from those who kneel down to drink.' 300 of them drank from cupped hands, lapping like dogs. All the rest got down on their knees to drink. The Lord said to Gideon, 'With the 300 men that lapped, I will save you and give the Midianites into your hands. Let all the others go home.'" I mean, this is crazy, right? God looks at his tiny ranks and he says, no, you still have too many. You're still too rich in resources. You'll still boast if you overtake the Midianites. And so God devises this really bizarre test, right? I mean, this secret test, take the men down to the water and here's how we'll divide them up. He kind of divides them up between the group that will lap the water like a dog, right? Like that will lap a water like the dog versus those that kneel down. Now, the text doesn't say that, but what animal opposite the dog kneels down to get a drink, right? The cat. Now, do you notice that the Bible doesn't even mention the word cat? Do I have to prove, does this prove that God loves dogs more than cats? I rest my case right here, right? Who does God choose? Chooses the 300 who lap like a dog. And I'm looking at this thinking, Gideon must just be about to lose his mind. I mean, he's in this resource challenge, this fight for his life, and God says, this is how arbitrary it's going to be, Gideon. Just so you know, this is not about your own strength. We'll take the dog lappers and we'll go into battle with them. I mean, I don't know what leadership challenge you're facing right now, but I know that you're going through one. In fact, when you think about resources being thin, I think of many of the conversations I have with people on a week in and week out basis. I mean, people who tell me, you know, I'm being spread so thin. You know, I'm back to work, but it's not the same. And the people that I worked with, some are still on furlough, some have been laid off, and I'm wearing multiple hats. And I feel very, very thin. Others have told me that they feel thin because they're working, and yet they're trying to figure out how to do school at home and virtual, and they just feel like everything about them is just being stretched to the limit. It feels as though there's just not enough resources. I want to tell you that when your resources feel the most thin, this is an opportunity that God is going to use if you can be patient and stick with him through this. That God, time and time again, will remove those resources to show himself through. You know, I got to tell you, as your pastor, I've been in leadership and in the church for almost 20 years now, and I will tell you that without a doubt, this is the most bizarre time to lead. And to be a pastor, to lead a church, I can't tell you how different of an experience. And I came from experiences in the corporate world where we went through lean and mean times, right? I remember all that language. I was part of a company that we bought another company, and management decided we had too many people on the payroll, and so they decided to trim the fat, as they called it. They went from 40,000 on staff to 10,000 on staff. Now, that's not trimming the fat. That is cutting off appendages, right? And I went through that, and God got us through that. And it was actually an amazing time. And I worked in banking and part of a small bank that got bought by a bigger bank and thought, oh, no, you're never going to survive. And yet we made it through that. And yet I would tell you, in all of those experiences, this experience is by far the most strange. And maybe the most straining. I mean, you think about it, we have a great group of people here today, but we'll probably still have more people online viewing our church. And we're not taking an offering right now. We're relying on online giving. And I'll tell you that this church, God has done amazing things in this church, in the faithfulness of this church during this time. We are so blessed as a community. I'll tell you, the big difference for me in being a part of the leadership in the church is really the biggest difference is the church is really led by this volunteer organization. I mean, that is the church. It's the people of God doing the work of God. And that actually gets me excited when I see the resources that we can control get thinner is it becomes an opportunity to work and have God work through those moments. I want to tell you just as a pastor that that this time the church needs prayer more than ever. Not just our church, but every church. In fact, I would just challenge you as you think about your day that you would think about the church. As you're driving to work, as you're passing other churches, to pray for them. There's a lot of research that's being done right now, and the data would say that about 20%, one in five churches, are not expected to survive the next 18 months. And again, I'm telling you, we're doing really well as a church and as a body, but I care for the church, and I care for the future of the generations that the church is raising up. About 30% of the church since COVID hit, the church at large in North America has left and has not returned. They have not come back into the building. They have not come back to church online. And so that is what's facing the church. And would again, just encourage you to pray. That's why we're so excited to have our ministries coming back as they always do in the fall, our children's ministry, our youth ministry. We believe that this is an opportunity to continue to build into the next generation. I think times like this, for many, become kind of a time, as it was for Gideon, to think about abandoning. And this is the time when leadership really leans in to God. Leadership leans in, and this is your lean-in moment, to lean in to what God has in store for you. Whether you want to run, now is the time to trust God. I think it's easy to trust God when your resource banks are full, when everyone likes you, you know, when you're healthy. And it's another thing to trust God when times are more challenging and more difficult. Again, I don't know what you're facing in your leadership. I've had many tell me that this has been a discouraging season for them and their leadership. They've faced criticism. They've faced complainers and armchair quarterbacks. And I know what that can do to the leadership potential. It can make you want to just fold. Your natural response is to say, well, I don't have what it takes. I don't have the resources to lead in this time. And this is your lean-in moment. Not to lean into your critics, but to lean into God. You know, I think you find in times like this that the hardest person to lead is really yourself, and to lead yourself back to God. You know, you think about leaning into God, and really, I think people make this more harder than it really is. I mean, leaning into God is not striving, it's not driving yourself back to God. It's leaning, it's sinking into God. It's just developing and coming back to the habit of spending time with God. That's what I do on a daily basis and throughout the day, just trying to get my mind centered on what God would want. Reading his word and just remembering his truths in scripture, and then not isolating myself from community. That's really important. In fact, leaning into God is really about leaning into each other. I loved listening to Pastor Mike's message last week because he went through this long list of things that just made me feel so encouraged as a part of this community. Mike was listing all the ways in which, as a church body, we've been engaged and involved during COVID. And I knew about all these things, and I was part of many of these things. But to hear this long list of faithfulness in the church, I want to tell you, when resources seem thin, the greatest resources are not the programs. The greatest resources are the people in the church. And that doesn't end. We can lean into each other. And the groups that we have starting up, I'm so excited for coming up. It's encouraging. And I think what Gideon needed more than anything is he needed encouragement. He's going to get it from a very strange source. God does something strange in the next scene. He tells Gideon to sneak into the Midianite camp, like hide in the shadows and just eavesdrop. Listen in on what your enemy is saying about you. Picking back up in verse 12. It says, the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the other eastern people had settled in the valley, thick as locusts. Their camels could no more be counted than the sand on the seashore. Gideon arrived just as a man was telling a friend his dream. I had a dream, he was saying. A round loaf of barley bread came tumbling into the Midianite camp. It struck the tent with such force that the tent overturned and collapsed. His friend responded, this can be nothing other than the sword of Gideon, son of Joash. The Israelites. God has given the Midianites and the whole camp into his hands. Then Gideon heard the dream and its interpretation. He bowed down and worshiped. He returned to the camp of Israel and called out, "Get up. The Lord has given the Midianite camp into your hands." I love this part of the story. I mean, this is where you really see that leadership is gutsy. And it requires risk and taking a risk. Leadership is not about leading from an org chart or a spreadsheet. You must engage with the enemy. And it's so strange, right? I mean, Gideon goes into the camp and he's so scared, his little 300 men up against 200,000 warriors. And he hears this dream, right? This dream is so bizarre. There's this loaf of barley bread rolling into the camp. And the interpretation is, oh no, Gideon is going to overtake us. The sword of Gideon is going to crash. And it was encouraging to Gideon. Yeah, I don't know about you, but have you ever had someone just say just the right words at just the right time when you needed to hear it? I was thinking this week about how every person here, you could be just that for somebody else. You could be words of encouragement. You could be just the right words in just the right way to someone who needs to hear it. And Gideon needed to hear it. In fact, it's kind of humorous what he overhears. He overhears them talking about this loaf of bread rolling into the camp, and they say, "This must be the sword of Gideon." I bet Gideon probably started to laugh audibly. He didn't even have a sword. His sword had been turned into a plow. He had nothing to go into battle with. In fact, you'll see that he goes into battle with a trumpet and a torch and a jar. That's how the 300 men are equipped. And God gives him all of this strength, all of these words to encourage him so that he could go back and encourage the people. And what does he do? He goes back and he's passionate, right? Get up. This is our battle. Now, wait a minute. Nothing's changed, Gideon. I mean, the metrics haven't changed. Your resources haven't changed. But Gideon has this confidence now, and he begins to bring that back to the people. And I think this is what's so important, that leadership is all about influence. Leadership is influence. You cannot separate leadership from people, but you cannot separate leadership from influencing others. Leadership is influence. It's nothing more. It's nothing less. And you have to be passionate as a leader. I think the wrong question that people ask a lot of times is, well, how do I encourage someone? Instead, what if you just began to ask, how do I influence someone in a way that brings out the best in them, that brings out the best version of Christ in them? That's what influence is all about. And so Gideon takes these men and he influences them, right? I mean, he gets them up in the middle of the night and says, we're going to go into battle with nothing more than trumpets and torches and jars. Like, that just does not sound very intimidating. But again, watch what God does in this moment. In verse 17, it says, "Watch me," he told them, "follow my lead. When I get to the edge of the camp, do exactly as I do. When I and all who are with me blow our trumpets, then from all around the camp, blow yours and shout for the Lord and for Gideon." Gideon and the 100 men with him reached the edge of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, just after they had changed the guard. They blew their trumpets and broke their jars that were in their hands. The three companies blew their trumpets and smashed their jars, grasping the torches in their left hands and holding in their right hands the trumpets they were to blow. They shouted, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon," while each man held his position around the camp. All the Midianites ran, crying out as they fled. When the 300 trumpets sounded, the Lord caused the men throughout the camp to turn on each other with their swords. I mean, I love how this story ends, right? I mean, these guys must have looked ridiculous. I mean, trumpets blaring and, you know, torches and bottles smashing. And they made some noise. They made some ruckus. But it's that last line, that the Lord caused the men throughout the camp to run. I think this is really what we need, that we need this opportunity to trust God in the middle of our battle. I mean, I think God has made this so obvious, right? I mean, that leadership is really all about our relationship with him. Leadership is all about our relationship and growing that relationship with God. What Gideon knew is that nothing plus God would mean everything in the battle. I want to just give us a few moments here today to really reflect on what that means. What does it mean for you to have your leadership rooted in the relationship you have with God? That's really where all of your strength comes from. Maybe you come here today and you just begin to come to this moment and you begin to admit your weakness. That what you need in your leadership, what you need in your home, what you need in your workplace is you need to let God fight your battles. I know that sounds cliche, but that is exactly the way in which God works in this story and in every story. So as the worship team comes up to lead us, I just want to simply give us these moments. And in these moments when it seems like resources are thin, that God more than ever is trying to get our attention, to trust him and to lean into our life with him and to just let him lead your life. And so if you would simply bow your head, and if you would pray with me, please. God, I'm just so grateful that the way in which you work is you do move us from strength to weakness so that we can place our weakness ultimately in your strength. God, I just pray in this room for those that are gathered here today, Lord, the ways in which you are needed, the ways in which, God, we want to turn over our leadership of our lives completely and wholly into your hands. God, I pray for those who feel weak in these moments, that feel that they just don't have the strength to make it through the next day, that you would lift them up in this moment, and that you would be their guide, and that you would go and you would fight for them, God. God, so we sing to you now, we give you full hearts, just full of praise. As Gideon did, we want to worship you in this moment, this good news and this excitement of what you do in changing our lives. We thank you for that. It's in your name we pray. Amen.
This podcast is a service of Bridgeway Community Church in Rockford, Michigan. Visit bridgewaycommunity.org for more information and other messages.